Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. JUDYGOLD.
Did your life change after that? Like, did your career change? Did your, look, years ago, if a comic in the 60s did Johnny Carson Ed Sullivan,
right.
That was it.
Yeah. I didn't feel like that. I mean, I have no complaints. I'm very happy. I'm happy to be sitting here with you now and talking about all this stuff and all the things that I've done. I'm happy to do them. But it wasn't like I became a star, you know, like it wasn't like but I mean what I'm saying is the parts that I got offered were not like star parts.
Did you know, I've heard you say,
I think they thought I was a little off. They weren't sure what to do with me,
right?
Yeah,
because you're playing
like
a woman.
Nowadays I think there's more of a market for someone who has that skill
set. Of course.
Yeah.
You then, after M. Butterfly, you go to you do Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I mean, M. Butterfly, that's 10 years later.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You do Charlie Brown. Uh-huh. You're playing Linus.
Yeah.
And Charles Schulz has to okay that an Asian person can play Linus.
Well, he has to okay all the choices that Michael's making, the director and the production. And I think that was part of the package of it. And yes, he did, yeah. And they did. And it was 1998, and so at that time, I guess we were ready for that.
Right. Now,
there wasn't a lot of backlash or people being upset about it. There was a black Schroeder.
Right. You...
and a human Snoopy.
In between M. Butterfly and good... whatever, Charlie Brown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were cast on the first Asian-American family on television, starring Margaret Cho.
I was, yes.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Asian people in that show. That was like, that was the hard.
Okay. So here's the deal.
Here's the deal.
It was, first of all, I've heard you talk about this so many times, that expectation of wanting to be a leading man and knowing that, and through your career, not getting leading man parts, simply because you're Asian.
Yeah.
But you've sort of accepted this character actor sort of role.
I love that part of it. And actually, really, in recent months or years, the parts have gotten better.
Right.
But I'm not, I would like to carry, I like the opportunity or the responsibility or the challenge of carrying something.
Right.
What we call carrying something.
Okay. So you get cast on this pilot.
Yeah.
It's Margaret. It's Jodie Long.
It's
Clyde Kusatsu. It's Amy
Hill.
It's what was his name? The son?
J.B. Kwan.
Maddie Corman. And Judy Gold! Ba 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 ba. And I would always say, figures my first, series regular job is on an Asian American family, and I'm 6'3". So, So it was groundbreaking because it was the first Asian American family, but it was fucking sanitized to the point that Margaret couldn't be herself.
We
bonded. Yeah. Like the greatest thing about that show was the friendships I got out of it. But it was a little bit torturous getting those scripts.
And it was getting those scripts and us being young and kind of idealistic and wanting best for it.
Right.
And feeling the potential. And then it being kind of corporate.
Right.
You know, Disney. Remember like the whole thing about her Margaret's Angora sweater and like them having to approve her sweater and stuff like that.
And I had a big fight with them
about my hair. They wanted me to cut my hair. And I didn't want to cut my hair because I thought I was creating this role and stuff like that. And I should have just kept my mouth shut and cut my hair.
Right.
It was Disney, it was like a whole thing.
And
I didn't get that.
And
it became clear as we went along.
We were both, when the pilot got picked up for a series, we both were looking for places to live. And you gave me your sloppy seconds. And I loved that house. On Windsor Boulevard. Remember that? You're like, I have the perfect house for you on Windsor Boulevard.
Because I had passed on it.
Yeah. I loved it. I had it for years.
You did?
Yes. I kept it for years.
I love it.
Yeah. We would also have dinner. Well, like we were like.
Toy. Yeah.
We Toy were like a family.
We were. We had dinner all the time with Maddie and Margaret.
And we talked about everyone behind their backs.
Yeah, and we were, what do you call it, commiserating together about the experience the whole time. You know, like trying to figure out, like troubleshooting it. Trying to figure out why it had to be so tortured. Yeah.
And then Terry Hughes directed. Is he still alive?
I believe so, yeah.
And one of the writers murdered his wife and is in jail, J.J. Wall. Remember?
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. This is true.
Yeah.
And, but we wanted it to stay because we loved the money. Didn't you love the money?
I mean, we're in the money. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, that's true. But we also, there was an opportunity that was totally missed. And there was something heartbreaking about that.
Right.
It was like, totally missed.
Now.
Because the potential to have a show starring Margaret even today is still incredible.
Right.
And like how that hasn't fixed itself is really tragic. And you see, the 2020 version of that is the show that I'm working on with
Nora Aquafina, from Queens.
Which is cut from the same kind of energy, like a forceful star personality, Asian American, and writing a show around her.
It's like a family.
It's a more real family, and it doesn't sanitized, I guess, is a good word, the word that you use, sanitized.
Right.
That they to be super honest, it was a white version yes. of an Asian family.
Right.
There was maybe one Asian writer, but there was not a lot of Asian energy creating it the way there is with Nora's show.
Right.
And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
It just makes it such a tremendous difference. It's like trying to write a straight version of a gay show.
Right.
You know.
But we did go to San Francisco for that stupid yeah. Reebok thing, and we all had dinner with your family.
Yes.
Oh, that was so fun. And oh my God. I feel
we were like riding God. In yeah. a limousine, and yeah. Reeboks was giving us free sneakers. And we thought we were just
we
like,
just thought we were the fucking yeah. greatest thing.
Yeah.
You were with Richie at this point.
Uh-huh, yeah.
How did you meet Richie? And
I met Richie when I was in M Butterfly.
And he became your manager.
He became my agent. Yeah.
Your agent.
Yeah.
And then you married him.
Sort no, of. I never married him.
Well, you know what I mean. Not marry. Oh,
well,
yeah, I
mean,
can't
now
say
there's
that
a
anymore.
Difference.
Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever, Mr. Perfect. So that show...
I'm saying that because I'm actually married to somebody
that's
now.
Right. I know.
So,
that
you
was
know,
a fun wedding. Wanna... Anyway, so... The show ends... Well, we are... The best episode, of course, was when I walked around naked.
Yeah, it was.
And
it was.
Some camera guy was like, ugh, and I got him... Fired. I don't think he got fired. I just was like, I have to be naked, and he's making me feel uncomfortable.
Right, but you weren't naked.
No, I had a flesh-colored bodysuit on, but I was skinny then. I was like, I can't, and I thought I was fat. Anyway, and then we got canceled.
Yeah.
But you did you get canceled?
Oh,
no.
I got phased out.
You got phased
they
out.
They started concentrating on Margaret and her friends.
Friends, right. And I guess I wasn't cool enough to be her friend. But then they wanted to make it friends.
Yo, no, and then she moved in with Amy, her grandmother.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They kept Amy.
Yeah.
And because Amy got a lot of laughs.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And we were all fucking thrown to the curb.
The main thing that I remember is that we had really good times and that we worked really hard and that we had great expectations. And then we just kind of watched it kind of fizzle out.
Gary Jacobs.
Thank together, you. Yeah.
So.
And we learned a lot of lessons, I think. I mean, I think I have a perspective on it that I didn't have before about how to create a situation that would really work. And that authenticity and that bringing people together that can help someone's vision, like Margaret's vision,
right.
come to fruition is absolutely essential.
Right.
And that we were hungry enough and our self-esteem was low enough back then to go, oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you
right,
for this
right.
opportunity. However you want to do it is great, but we're just happy to be in it. We can't do that anymore. We have
right.
to say, actually, if we're going to do it, then we have to do it and it has to be her point of view and
right.
it has to be really her truth. And that's how it's going to be good for you too, because it's going to be authentic and the audience will respond to
right.
it because of it. There's no, that's a kind of a no-brainer now,
right.
but then it was.
Yeah, it was like pulling fucking teeth
yeah,
out of them.
It was.
So you end up, you know, then Charlie Brown, and then.
Charlie Brown.
How did SVU. Come about?
SVU came about because I had done 6 seasons of Oz on HBO.
Now, Oz, you played a priest.
I did, yeah.
You played a Catholic priest,
yeah.
which you said you kind of liked because
did,
it wasn't
yeah.
it wasn't Asian specific.
No, it wasn't.
And you were sick of being doctors.
I was totally sick of being doctors.
And I heard I read somewhere that you hate lab coats when you go to a
When you go to the fitting and you see the lab coat there, your heart breaks
right.
a little bit. Yeah.
So you don't go into Kiehl's, is that correct?
Well, I mean, I don't have to wear the lab coat at Kiehl's. No, yes.
Why do they wear lab coats at Kiehl's? They're not scientists.
Yes.
They walk out, they all have glasses, and they're like, oh, can I help you? And I'm like, you're not a fucking dermatologist.
I know.
It's so annoying. Okay.
Like Disneyland.
So Oz, you were very critically, of course, you're critically acclaimed actor.
Thank you.
Yes. Then you get, do you get SVU?
Right after, yeah, I got that. And Jackson had just been born.
So you and Richie decide that you want to have kids. And
yeah.
you get a surrogate.
Yes.
And you use Richie's sister's egg and your sperm.
Yeah.
And Shauna.
And Shauna.
Shauna gives birth to twins.
Yes.
And unfortunately, Boaz passes. But Boaz was the...
Shauna gave birth 12 weeks prematurely.
Right.
As that happens sometimes.
Yes.
So that as a result, Boaz didn't survive the birth, and Jackson
but
did.
You say something so beautiful about Boaz is that he was getting the nourishment from Shauna, and Jackson was getting the nourishment from Boaz.
Yes,
so
that's right.
He was the conduit.
They had a condition where, yeah, as identical twins, one of them gets more than the other, and one of them becomes anemic as a result, and the other one becomes over. I forgot the word. It's too much blood.
Right.
And so it was as if it was because they were connected to each
right.
other that. Why do you make me do this?
I'm sorry.
That what you said.
Right. And you wrote the most beautiful. I was on your friend's email list, and you wrote the most beautiful emails while you were going through this process.
Yes, because it was a coping mechanism.
Right.
Because it was like, oh, like help me get through this. It was like the beginning of email, actually. It was
right.
like 2000. And we were emailing, but we weren't all kind of, we were still learning about it
right.
or whatever. We were getting into it. And I was trying to take advantage of this technology. And I reached out to 90 people at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to write to my family and say, hey, we're having an operation. This is the situation. The first email I wrote explained to all these expectant relatives and friends, this is what happened. It didn't work out the way that we thought it would, but this is what it is. And, please root for us or whatever. And then I'll be writing to you again, because in a couple of weeks, Jackson's, I think, is going to have an operation. And he did have an operation in the next couple of weeks. So I sent a little kind of thing. As I kept writing these emails week after week, I got more into it, and I got more kind of dramatic and funny about it.
Yeah.
It was a coping mechanism,
Course.
And I thought, well, I also wanted people to read them. So I thought, well, they're not just going to read these like
right.
clinical, boring,
tired. Clinical.
No, but that's why I tried to make them not that
sorry.
Way. So I was working hard to kind of make them entertaining. And then by the end of it, there were like 1,000 people that were all kind of following along and passing them on and forwarding them to other people. And then we took him home.
Oh,
to make
and he's so beautiful, isn't he?
He's beautiful.
He's such a beautiful person. I wonder if he's here this evening.
No, he's not, is he? Oh, my God.
Oh.
His cover is blown.
His
I'm sure you would have
blown.
Liked to have sat
he's
there the whole time.
He's such a great kid. Boaz, Dove, and Benjamin. Benjamin's middle name is Dove, too.
Yeah.
Jackson's so fucking great. All right, but we'll get to him in a second. Do you feel like... So you and Richie
yeah.
have this family.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it brought you closer? It...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it brought us... I mean, we're you're with somebody for a long time, you will have... You can't take away whatever,
right.
no matter what happens to your relationship. You can't, the thing that brings you together and that experience is a bonding experience.
Right.
Like he and I will have a text or something that will reconnect with an aspect of that experience.
Right.
And he's the only person that knows
right.
what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Aww.
You know, like I'm having a Boaz moment is what
right.
I used to say. I'm having a Boaz moment.
I want to hug you.
That's okay.
And I'm sure you'll have them for the rest of your life.
I don't have them very often. I haven't had one in quite some time. So,
oh, I'm
so,
glad I could bring
yeah,
that up
yeah.
for you.
Hey, everyone. You know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer, and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them, and they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
You came out in 2003.
Yeah, because the emails became a book, and then the right. book was being peddled, and I thought, oh, wow, this means I'm coming out. It was really surprising.
So, but had you thought about coming out before?
Publicly, okay. So this is, we're talking about publicly.
I mean, we all knew.
Yes, we all knew.
In 94
yeah.
that you were a bit queer.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
I keep touching my hair. I'm just so
well,
sweaty.
Well, I know, because you're so gay.
Yeah.
2003.
Yeah. So we came. Yeah, the book comes out, and I realized that was a whatever, coming clean or whatever. You know, like kind of like just setting the record straight, whatever.
Did you? Was it uncomfortable for you before that when you were doing like interviews and stuff?
It was. It was like because I wasn't ready to do it, and so I was always trying to control it.
Right.
And control is always going to be
the
worst
downfall.
Thing you should try
yeah.
to do. Yeah, you can never be in a situation, especially in a like an interview situation where you try to control something.
Right.
You just have to be open to it and let it happen.
Right.
And so I would not be able to do that before. And then all of a sudden I didn't have to do it anymore.
Right. And it's so freeing.
I think it was actually kind of surprised how freeing it was.
Right.
I knew it would be freeing, but I didn't realize. And then, you know, also Jackson, you know, is of a generation that doesn't really have the same kind of conflict about it that we had. That was installed into us by our parents or
right.
by our people, what the time that we lived in. He doesn't have that as much. So it's less of a big deal. It's nice to know that that thing exists, but it for him, I don't think he feels it the
and
same
way.
And
it's so interesting having kids. Henry was born in 96, and I came out, too, because uh-huh, I was yeah. like, I'm not going to get on stage and lie or make up shit.
Or
I had so much material.
Or fudging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had so...
Oh, right.
You
wanted to share it because it
right,
was great
and
material.
I had really good material. Anyway, and it's freeing... Definitely affected my career. I don't know if it had any effect on your career.
It did. Oh, I mean, I think it was positive for me because I was positive, and it was
right.
and it was bad for you.
Well, it was like first you're too Jewish.
Oh, right, right.
And then
pigeonholing.
And it was also, and I never wanted to be a lesbian comic. I wanted to be a comic who happened to be a lesbian.
Yes.
I wasn't going to get on stage and just talk about, oh, I'm a lesbian, I'm a lesbian, I'm a lesbian. I just wanted to be a great comic.
Yeah.
And who happened to be a lesbian and proud, you know?
Yeah.
But. What kind of message is it to your kids if you hide that? Like, oh, we don't talk about that in public,
yeah.
you know?
That's right.
And having these kids like Jackson and Henry and Ben, where it's like, you know, them as young kids saying, wait, why can't you get married? You
yeah.
know, like, I don't
yeah.
understand. Like, they literally had no idea why we were different
yeah.
than other families.
Yeah. And have to explain to them the concept of the discrimination or
right.
the pain when they don't feel it themselves. It's not
right.
really swirling around them.
And that
way.
They have to come out as well. They have to come out
That's
every
right.
day.
Yeah.
Like, no, my father's not tall. I don't even know how tall. My father's like size of a sperm. But so you come out in 2003. You get SVU. Do you know when you, starting SVU, you have a child and you're, you know, that this show is...
Going to be on for 25 years?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I came in the second season of it. Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, I took the job because I didn't want to leave him. I didn't want to leave town because I didn't like going to LA, which I don't really like anyway.
Same.
And I got a contract. You know, like a contract to be in a show that's shot in New York. I mean, it was the luckiest thing ever.
Were you like, oh my God, pinching yourself?
Yes,
like,
I was. I didn't realize that, fast forward a few years later, that I'd be kind of bored later.
Right.
And rightly, I mean, you know, understandably so. And I'm not, I don't mean to complain about it because it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it afforded me exposure, and everything that came with it was fantastic. But you never, well, that's the, you know, the point is you never know anything.
Right.
You don't know, and butterfly, whatever. You don't know what's
going
to happen.
Your life can change in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're on it for 11 years.
I'm on it for 11
years. You know, it was so great. You know, Henry was addicted to SVU, like, which
he was like,
yeah, always.
Did you let him watch it when he was little?
Oh my God. He would watch it. He started like in middle school, and then he started saying, like, we would have fights and he'd be like, that's false. I'm like, no, Henry, no one talks like that in a fight. And, or he'd be like, I'm calling the children, blah, blah, blah. You know,
child services. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So he would always like, and then he didn't want me to talk about when he was in junior high. He didn't want me to talk about him in my act. He's like, I'm getting a cease and desist. I'm like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. And one time, actually, I was doing Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Uh-huh.
And I was with Melissa Joan Hart. And Henry's like, oh my God, she's in the best episode of SVU. She's so good. She's so good. So I go
to
rehearsal.
Did he know her by name or face?
No, he knew her by face. Uh-huh. I said, Melissa Joan Hart. He's like, and he looked her up. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, she's in the best episode of SVU. And I go into rehearsal. I go, oh my God, my son, he's like 14. He loves you. He said, you're in the best episode ever of SVU. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet and interesting because I played a child rapist?
Yeah.
I raped a 13-year-old boy. I was like, oh, well, great. So can I get a photo? Or, you know. But when he knew that I knew you, it was, I got a fucking feather in the cap. I'm
wow.
Oh, I'm friends with BJ. And he's like, oh, yeah. So you decide to leave SVU.
Uh-huh.
After 11 years.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I could do that. I mean, opening that check and being home and sleeping in your own bed.
Sleeping in your own bed.
Yeah.
But 11 years, you know, that was a good amount of time.
Right.
It was a good amount of time.
Did you
it was a conscious thing, like, okay.
Did you talk to Richie about it?
No, we were by that time separated.
Okay.
I think. And so what I think what happened, I think this is 2011. Yeah, 2000 to 2011.
Right.
I was ready to do something else. That's all there is to it. I was ready to do something else, and I could not do that something else unless I left. So then I was, and I think it also had been going on for maybe 2 or 3 years that I felt
where
that
you were
way.
Like,
so
ugh.
By then, it was like, okay, I'm really going to do it. So it wasn't just like all 11 years, suddenly I decided it. It had built up over the last three or four years.
How soon before you left did you and Richie separate?
We separated actually closer to 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a little boy, mm-hmm. you're sharing custody.
Yeah.
You're a single parent.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, ish.
You're sharing. And you're doing the show. And then you're like, I don't want to do the show anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And does your agent go, what the fuck is wrong with you?
No, my manager actually. Yeah.
Your manager.
I said, I'm really ready to do this, and can we get something else? Do you think we can get something else, or what do you think? And they supported me.
Wow. Do you think behind your back?
Well, you're right, though. I mean, they're like this. They don't want to let go.
Yeah,
they don't
they're always
let go.
Like, you sure?
Yeah, because
you know, it's going to be really hard, but blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know why they are.
And it's all because my 10% isn't coming in. Yeah.
Yeah. But they were great. I think that my meme being unhappy was really a big part of it. I said, I just think it's time. And I think subconsciously I knew that the work that I had done prior to that was far more interesting. Like, it was soul satisfying.
Right, you were, yeah.
I was what I have now described as a character actor. Like, I feel like I'm more of a character actor.
Right.
And I'm more myself when I'm trying to do something kind of wild, something different. And this was very
standard.
And you
had done, like, Father of the Bride, yeah, and done other movies. How did you meet Reichert?
I met Reichert at a
I say it better than you do. You
Reichert.
Say Reichert, and I say Reichert. Because I'm a Jew.
Okay, well.
And if you ask Reichert, he would say, oh, Judy says it correctly.
Yes, he would.
Yeah.
He likes you very much.
I love him. He's so, first of all, he's smart and he's hot. Okay, so go ahead.
True, all true.
All right, where'd you meet him?
At a party. You know, not really that most interesting thing.
Oh, boring?
Yeah.
And did you know right away?
No. I thought, this isn't really
gonna happen.
My thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it, we just ended up, it just turned out to be one of those things where I wanted to be with that I wanted to hang out with that person more. My whole...
You're physically, yeah.
I just felt that works for me, whatever that is, the
right
energy. And I wanted to have it again and again. And then I kept going back to have more dates. And it went on for the better part of like a year and a half where we didn't take ourselves seriously at all. Like he was into it and I was into it, but we never would say anything serious about it at all.
Right. And then who proposed to who?
I proposed.
Controlling.
What?
Controlling. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, because he knew that it was up to me, because I was the person that was not a particularly marriage. I didn't
right
think of myself as a marriage person. I didn't. I'm totally a marriage person now. But I thought, oh, can't we just kind of just keep doing what we're doing?
Right.
It's really great.
So when Richie ends up marrying Jordan Roth.
Yes.
Does he meet Jordan about, like, before you met Reichert?
Oh, yeah. I didn't meet Reichert for many years after we broke up. I didn't meet Reichert until...
And were you jealous of, like, Richie and...
No.
You're too mature. I can't take it.
Jackson had a nanny named Eugenia, who was wonderful older woman from Bolivia. And she couldn't believe that I didn't eschew Jordan. She just...
Really?
Yeah, she said, I would just scratch his eyes out, she said. and I thought that was amusing,
right,
really, because I had no inclination to scratch Jordan's eyes out.
Did your professional relationship with Richie end when your relationship ended?
It kind of evolved.
Okay.
And then Richie stopped being an agent, actually, kind of retired from being an agent.
Now, you did Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is huge. I mean, you're like a fucking major character in a fucking...
Yeah, but I wasn't in the beginning.
Not in the beginning,
yeah,
but you did that. You did that with that character, don't you think?
Well, what happened, to be quite honest, was that they left this character completely unattended in the first movie. He didn't die. He didn't... Nothing happened to him.
Right.
He wasn't even explained. And then years and years later... Colin Trevorrow was taken on the role of trying to revive the franchise and write a proper sequel to the original movie. Where there were two other movies,
right,
but they're not really sequels to that movie. And so he, in doing that, had to kind of like look to see who wasn't dead. You know, kind of
right,
kind of revive whatever there was to revive. And that was the only character that had any kind of,
wow,
of legs to it.
You are fucking so lucky.
So I'm lucky, yeah.
You know you're
oh,
lucky.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. That was the luckiest thing ever.
But
it was partly because of... there was partly a racial thing, I think. You know, like, they didn't care about the Asian guy.
Right.
They were not that into him. They didn't think he had legs to him or
right
wasn't, you know. So I was like, you know, it's kind of the right... It kind of made itself right, as far as I'm concerned.
I heard you did Pippin and left your computer on top of the car. Is that correct?
Now we're getting into...
Yeah.
Now we're getting into questions that came from the audience, clearly.
I love that song. I do too.
That's right. Pearly, not Tiffany.
I know.
Okay,
shit.
That's not Tiffany.
Yeah, but I love that song.
That's Pearly.
Shit.
I got love.
I wouldn't have been in Pearly for lots of reasons.
No, it's everything has its season.
Yes, very good. I was in the Bay Street production of Pippin in 2008. Right.
And you left your computer on top of your car.
And I left my computer on top of the car, and I had Eugenia and Jackson and Anastasia were in the car. Mm-hmm. And then I drove away. And Anastasia said, honey, I think something came off the car. And then we drove back, and there was a shattered computer on the highway.
Oh, that's great.
That I used for...
Did you curse?
Oh, yeah. I was so stressed out. It was like that kind of single parent kind of
stress.
Yeah,
like, fuck!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like trying to get somewhere.
How did you
or
meet Anastasia?
Doing Pippin.
Is that where you met?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I love Anastasia Barzee, ladies and gentlemen. Anastasia Barzee.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord. And others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
So after you leave SVU, Do you have a little lull?
I had a lull.
Yeah. And that was the first time.
Couldn't get hired. Yeah.
Had a lull. First time in your fucking career.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. How was that?
Like 2 years. I'm going to LA for pilot season.
Oh, please. I can't.
And all that. Like 2 or 2.5 years or something like that.
And
like I couldn't get her. Like they didn't know where I. They could. Yeah. I couldn't. I wasn't me. I didn't know who I was really, as an actor. I really didn't. I didn't know this then, but now I figured out. Oh, they. Well, first of all, I wasn't eligible for those character parts anymore. I kind of totally proceduralized myself.
Right.
And I was only thought. And then there was no interest in it, I guess, or whatever. And then I got a job on that show, Awake.
Right.
You know,
and
it was like after having said I will not play a doctor or a therapist again, I got the part of a therapist.
So in those 2.5 years, did you ever say to yourself, "Oh my God, I should never have left SVU"?
No.
Wow, really? I would have been like, "You fucking asshole." Can't believe you left All American.
No,
Girl.
I think I always felt from the beginning of all of this.
So you never questioned yourself?
No, because I always thought, you just wait. You just have to just wait. You just have to keep going at it and just...
And you never got depressed or like, I want to quit or I'm going to go
No, I never thought I would quit. I started writing and I wanted to write more.
Right.
And continuing to write, and writing is really important to me. And it was a good time for me to...
Right.
Be able to start doing
well,
that.
Well, that's what happens when you're on a fucking show for 11 years and don't have to worry about, like, you
that's
know.
Right. That's right.
Fucking
yeah.
jerk.
Yeah.
You ended up going back to do a guest spot on SVU.
Yeah, twice.
And you got, can you tell us a little story about getting into the makeup chair?
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Okay, so I bled. This is really good.
Such a good story.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, don't say.
All right,
why
sorry,
you
it's not that good. It's a boring story. It's boring.
Terrible
it's boring.
Story. But the point of the story is that I left SVU 2011, maybe 2012 or 13. They have me back. And they figured out some way to justify that I'm going to be there for one, to profile one case or whatever. And I go and I sit in the makeup chair. And by this time, they've turned the makeup department over and there's a new makeup artist there. And she's this very young woman. And she's, or maybe it's, no, it's the hair person.
Okay.
Okay. And so I sit in her chair and she stands behind me as a hair person does. And she's fluffing my hair.
And
she says, so, is this how you had it at the audition? Because she thought I was just coming in, you know, and I said, oh, I was like, my mind just blew up in my mind. I was thinking so many things.
Okay,
The way we talked about it. Okay.
Yes, you said she came over and said, oh, how do you want your hair? And you said, I don't, you know, the way normally is. And she said, well, how did you wear it to the audition?
What was the difference?
Because then it was a two-parter. As a comedian, I know what build-up is.
The point was she...
You gave away the punchline too fucking
soon. No, I mean, also,
soon.
People don't really understand, like, what happens is when you're, a day player, you come in for one day, and, you know, the makeup artist is so... That department, they're so over all the people they have to make up and do their hair and stuff like that. So they want to make it as easy for themselves as possible, actually. So like, you know, is this how you had it?
Because
I will get in trouble if I redo your hair and they look at you.
Okay,
and
whatever.
You know.
Did you get like a ping in your heart, like, oh my God?
Yeah.
Because it was
I was pretty happy not being on the show anymore. So it was okay with me. I just thought it was amazing. I was amazed by it.
Are you?
I hadn't been gone that long.
Right. Are you friends with any of the people on SVU?
Stephanie March.
Really?
Uh huh.
What about Mariska?
I'm friendly with her, but I don't see her as much as I see Stephanie.
Do you remember there was a forensic gynecologist on? And you were so mean to her?
You were a gynecologist?
Yes, I was a forensic gynecologist. And you were so mean. You were like saying, you were so hard. But I mean, thank God you were there. Because
My character was mean or skeptical to you.
No, you were being an asshole. You're like, go walk over there. But wait, I never told you this. I got this, I went in, and it was all medical. It was like, oh, she went in, fetal tissue of the matter, right? And so I remember my agent was at Buchwald. I was with Buchwald. And I went in and read for it. And later that afternoon, the agent calls me and is like, you got the part of the gynecologist. How appropriate. Because I apparently know a lot about vaginas since I'm a lesbian. It's so appropriate for you. Yeah, that's what she said. Isn't that great? A lesbian playing a guy? All right, whatever.
I get it.
Yeah, that got about as much fucking reaction as the how'd you wear it to the audition. So, you're happily married.
I am.
You have an amazing son at NYU.
He's okay.
Oh, he's so fucking great.
He's truly great.
You went to Richie's wedding.
Yes.
He went to your wedding.
Yes.
I mean, it's like you're like lesbians.
Well, isn't that, I mean, you know, you share a child. You want to kind of, you know.
I know, but there's so many people who break up and it's like, fuck you fucking asshole.
Yeah, I guess there are. We don't have that.
On The Daily Show, you mentioned that you're grateful.
Did I?
Yeah. You said grateful, and then you said you hate saying that you're grateful because it is the most annoying hashtag grateful.
Yeah. That was why I hesitated. That's the only reason I hesitated. I didn't hesitate because I wasn't grateful or because I didn't want people to know. You know, I just think it kind of comes out a little cliche, and then you're that person that is kind of blindly saying it. So I wanted to say it with a kind of, I don't know, a disclaimer or something like that.
Because you work all the fucking time. Like, I don't think, Anastasia, isn't it like...
Annoying.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Should I tell the audience about the three of us?
Well, yes, but yes and no.
Okay. So we have a group text, and I swear to God...
They met through group text.
We met through group text. BD and I were texting, and and I had never met Anastasia, and now it's like they're like my family. I swear to God, they have gotten me through so many nights on the road where I'm like, I can't take it anymore.
Because we're both up really late at night, so she's in some crazy place of the country.
But do you realize what an anomaly, like, that no one works as, like, you work all the time. You just wrote the libretto and book for Mr. Holland's Opus.
Yes, I did.
Is that coming to Broadway?
You always, you know, dream and fantasize about it.
Okay, is it going to a theater near you?
It's coming to the Oak Young Quit Playhouse in Maine in
August.
Yeah.
That's great. I want to come.
Yeah.
Maine. Who'd they go for, Biden?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you believe a fucking old white man is going to be... I can't take it anymore.
Are we going to get into that?
No.
Okay.
So, do you realize... It's annoying. It really is annoying.
I annoy myself, okay? Does that help you?
No, you don't.
No, but I work really hard, you know?
I don't work hard? I'm not out at the fucking clubs every night!
Well, I don't know. Everyone works hard.
Who said that?
I don't mean that you don't work hard. I mean that I...
You have a some sort of...
Mojo.
No, you have a divine something. Because you're such a great person. That was annoying that I had to say that. You're just so great on so many levels, and you work all the fucking time.
What do I say? I mean, what do you... Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
So...
Thanks.
My podcast is called Kill Me Now because I basically wake up and that's the first thing out of my mouth because I fucking hate everyone. Now, I ask two questions of all my guests.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Number one, I suffer from depression, anxiety, I have ADHD. I'm like mental. My parents were old when they had me, that's why, and my grandparents were cousins. So, second cousin. But
is that true, really?
Second cousins, yeah, my grandma, I think.
Wow.
That's why I'm gigantic, too. So, I think I know the answer. Have you ever been on antidepressants?
I have not.
I knew it. And what do you do to keep yourself mentally healthy? Because you're pretty mentally healthy.
I put a lot of energy into my friends.
Really?
I try to. And I think because I get a lot back from that investment,
right.
I feel perspective. And
right.
I get perspective from them. And boy, mentally healthy. That's very interesting. I think balance is super important, like to try
yeah,
to balance
absolutely.
Things. And I'm perfectly capable of going too far doing any one thing or another, like
right.
working too hard or not working hard enough, you know, right. like that's just how the pendulum swings or whatever. And the relationships, I think, are the relationships that get you through that all of that working stuff.
Okay.
My relationship with my husband and... my evolving relationship with my son are very, really, really valuable
right,
to me.
Right.
And I hold on to them very tightly. And I try to do whatever I can to do my part in nurturing them. And that's because I think I can draw from them.
Right.
Like one of the things that I used to do all the time in the earliest part of my relationship with Rikert, I've been with Rikert for 10 years now. When I first met Rikert, I was out every night doing like something like this or a benefit or some gala or whatever.
Right.
Every single night I tried to do it because I felt like that was what you did to nurture your own career, that you were working
right,
to
right.
expose yourself, that you got, it's like publicity and it's free publicity. You couldn't say no. And it was also charity. It was your responsibility
yeah.
as a person in the public eye to change
it.
And then I started realizing that I was burnt out, one.
Right.
And the other thing was that all I needed to do was sit at home and watch television with
right.
Rikert and feel a resetting that I never felt before.
Right.
Like I was like, oh my gosh, we don't have to do anything actually. We actually sometimes don't even have to talk even with though we do. Just like taking a second has been really restorative to me. And so I always, that's the thing that's my takeaway from my relationship with him is like, let's do that. Let's just not do anything. And just be together for a minute. And it's been really, and luckily he's really into that and likes that. And then there are plenty of times when you can go out and do other things
right.
and do things like
this. But
it's
not every, I know.
It's not every night.
I know, I got like that too. And I was like, you know what, I can't.
Well, and you have to do it to a certain extent with your schedule on the road.
Right.
You don't have as much of a choice.
I know, I can't stand them.
I know.
What?
This is the second question?
Yes. What pisses you off more than anything, and it like makes you so fucking crazy angry? And it could be anything, but what fucking...
Of course it can be. I mean, like, there's so many things, right?
Right. Like, what is, like, I cannot fucking stand this.
Am I?
Is that you're saying that... That pisses you off when people say, are you...
Oh. That pisses me off. And the other thing is like, do I know you, or you look so familiar, but I don't know who you are kind of thing. Or them saying they... I love it when the people say, oh, are you... And then you say, yes, I am. And they go, I knew it.
Oh, I know. I hate that.
No, you didn't. But that doesn't piss me off as much as a general sense of people not using their brains to their potential.
Oh, I can't. I know, right?
We all have the brain.
Right.
We can do what we want with it. And you see it out there. Now you see it, of course, with the president and all that stuff. I don't know what his brain is capable of doing, actually. But he's not using it. He's so selfish that he won't even use his own brain properly. He doesn't even feel he has the need to have to know everything.
Right, I know. Right?
So that is that's an extension of something that's a pet peeve of mine. Like, you know, how hard is it to figure out that you should not stand in front of the door on the subway when other people are getting
off? Oh, like fucking fuck.
How hard is that to figure out?
I know. It's just
intelligence.
And let me off, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, or turn to the side or something. It's That to me is symbolic of a kind of not thinking.
What about looking at your phone while you're walking down? You're like behind the person.
Yeah, right.
And then you go up the stairs. And they fucking move over to the right. Yeah.
They're going up the stairs. From the subway.
I hate that. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, oh. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. So that is not, those little individual things are representative to me of someone being in their own head, not being out thinking, using their brain to get outside of themselves, because I like the, like I said, I think the human connection is the thing that makes us really special. We're really into it. Like that makes me feel alive when I'm able to connect to somebody. So even on the subway, that's part of it.
Right.
Like, let's work together or something.
Yeah.
And so how hard is that to work together? When you're in a musical, have you been in musicals? Like have you been on stage in a big musical and stuff?
Yes, not in off Broadway.
Well, no, I mean,
I was in Disaster, the musical, not in the Broadway the off-Broadway, Clinton, the musical.
Okay, no, so what I mean is, the one thing that I strongly believe is that people learn a lot about spatial awareness and things like that from being in musicals, right? So I wish for everyone should have
to be in a musical.
To ride the subway, that's what I think. You know, it's very logical, the way that you egress and enter something.
Right. I cannot thank you enough for this.
Yes, you can.
Yes, no, I can't. I fucking adore you.
I can't believe you put these people through this like marathon of
it
life.
It was so, did you guys like it? People love you. People love you. My friend Katie's here. She really wants to meet you, so don't be mean to them.
I won't.
BD.
The husband never came.
I know, what happened?
Oh.
Oh, he's in the back?
Oh, he was so respectful.
Oh. Bette Sussman, I can't thank you enough.
Bette Sussman.
Yes, Bette Sussman at the piano. B.D. Wong, Laura, thank you for all you do. Thank you to Alan Cumming. Thank you to the staff here at Club Cumming. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of Kill Me Now with B.D. Wong and Bette Sussman at the piano. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It helps more people find this amazing show. The only review you're allowed to give is 5 stars. Thank you. If you purchase any tickets for any of my upcoming events, please refer to your point of purchase for updates on rescheduling or refunds, and I will post anything I can on my website as soon as I know. And as we all know, this is a very uncertain time. So while you're social distancing, while you're washing your hands, while you're being neurotic, while you're helping others, while you're doing whatever you do, take time to listen to the entire backlog of amazing interviews that we've done on Kill Me Now. There's some like really funny, awesome things you can listen to, interviews you can listen to while you're going on a walk. And also, you can listen to my comedy albums, Conduct Unbecoming, Kill Me Now, and Judith's Roommate Had a Baby. You can get links to everything at judygold.com. You can go on wherever you listen to your music and plug my name in, and hopefully something will come up. And make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram for all updates. That's at Judy Gold, you know, like J-E-W-D-Y-G-O-L-D, like Jew Gold. And I'm thinking of all of you. Keep laughing. We're still allowed to laugh. And keep in touch. And wash your hands. And as we always say, so long!
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long!